Of all the images from the tragedy that followed Hurricane Katrina, photos of dead bodies floating on stagnant water in New Orleans were perhaps the most unsettling. Government officials concluded that a good number of people may have lived had they had the means to leave the city. And the problem is nationwide. It is estimated that 23 million mainly poor Americans do not own cars. In places like Newark, Atlanta, and even the so-called Motor City of Detroit, the lack of adequate transportation often means joblessness and, in times of disaster, desperation. In a moment, we'll speak with an expert on this issue, but first, let's go to Detroit, where reporter Quinn Kleinfelter boarded a bus to talk with folks for whom this is their only means of transportation.
One of Detroit's aging bus fleets scrapes against a curb along the busy thoroughfare of Woodward Avenue. In decades past, Motown's patron saint, Henry Ford, decreed that every Detroiter should have their own personal vehicle. As a result, public transportation took a back seat. Last year, Detroit's mayor added a few new buses with functioning wheelchair lifts to help satisfy the requirements of the Federal Americans with Disabilities Act. But he also cut bus routes to help offset a massive budget deficit, adding another obstacle to the Detroiters who have no other way to get to work. Most decline to talk about this aspect of their daily routine because many feel there's a stigma attached to riding the bus. Only the most poor or the most desperate ride the bus, say women like Kim, who won't give her last name because she doesn't want the driver to hear it.
I got on one bus and then I got a double so I could get on another bus. So once you get on another bus, you can use it again. And he told me that I could. And I use them to take my kids to school, so they're important to me. And he made me waste one that I needed. So it's real tough because I have two kids that go to two separate schools. I ride with them on one bus, but not on the other one.
Michael James.
Do you take the bus a lot?
Every day. It could be a little faster. I take it for the doctor going to pharmacy now. Had to pick up a prescription. Got to get there at 11, leave about 9:30. You know? That's about the hardest part.
Right. Herman. I hate riding the bus. It sucks.
Back door?
I'm standing up on the bus right now. I think it should be more buses. I think they could be a little faster as well, you know what I'm saying? Basically, my means of transportation. Just got to leave out earlier.
Coming out, big guy.
Maybe an hour or hour and a half early.
What would you try to do to make it better if you could?
Keep seeking Jesus.
That's all I can do. Stay close to God. He'll make a way for me. I won't be riding for too much longer.
The thoughts of regular riders along one of Detroit's bus corridors, engaging in their daily battle with traffic, the elements, and the system. For NPR News, I'm Quinn Kleinfelter in Detroit.
We now turn to Rob Puentes, a fellow with the Brookings Institution Metropolitan Policy Program. He joins us by phone from his office in Washington, D.C. Rob, nice to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
So you heard that report. Is there a transportation solution for people without cars, especially during an emergency, and do we need one for them?
There are certainly some solutions that have been proposed over the years in order to get low-income and working families to work. There are generally three strategies. They include urban reinvestment strategies that are designed to bring jobs closer to low-income communities. There are housing mobility strategies that help low-income residents have better access to jobs by opening up housing opportunities in the suburbs. And there are transportation-based strategies that are intended to enhance mobility. The first two strategies obviously are much longer-term strategies. They involve wholesale changes in metropolitan areas. The third one for transportation-based strategies are much shorter-term strategies, and they're designed to help people access jobs who need it today.
Are there any specific lessons that we could have learned in the wake of Katrina in New Orleans and the most recently in connection with the transit strike in New York?
Well, regarding Katrina, whether or not you think efforts to increase car ownership are helpful or harmful, given the negative externalities that are associated with car ownership, one thing that cannot be denied is that those without cars in New Orleans were definitely disproportionately affected by the tragedy. Now, it is difficult to compare workers in Manhattan trying to leave because of the transit strike or a potential terrorist attack with what happened in New Orleans. with residents that were literally trapped by the rising waters. But there are certainly some lessons that can be taken from this, particularly given efforts to increase residents' access to transit and mobility in general.
It's a tough balancing act, isn't it, trying to decide the appropriate ratio, if you will, between those who should have cars and those who need to rely on public transportation and providing enough transportation for them.
Yeah, it certainly is a balancing act. There are a series of current policies that are set up to address this problem. There's a national transportation law that has a program in there called the Job Access and Reverse Commute Program that is designed specifically to expand and improve transit service for welfare recipients and specific low-income groups. That program was took a little hit when they reauthorized the program last year. There are other proposals in the welfare reform proposals that are designed to increase car ownership programs for residences, and these are very controversial proposals. There are folks who have passionate ideas about it on both sides, but at the end of the day, what we really need to do is address the full slate of opportunities that involve how metropolitan areas grow and develop, and also give people access to jobs who need it today.
Rob Puentes is a fellow with the Brookings Institution Metropolitan Policy Program in Washington, D.C. Rob, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.